You're now tuned in to the Front Row Hoopcast. Your show for everything Butler basketball.
Oh boy, the Front Row Hoopcast is back. We've had a lot of guests on the show since Brendan King got his new job in South Bend. He's the voice of the Cubs minor league system. But we've got a Hoopcast legend in the studio today. One of the founding fathers of the Front Row crew, Marco Tomich. Back in 2013, we started this baby. And now, look at us now. And you know how this all started, because I was checking out Butler Hoops and some guy goes, they were commenting about the Hoopcast, and they go, man, Ari is a dumbass. They need to get Tomich back on there. And I was thinking, this guy may have a point, because I am a dumbass, and we had to get Tomich back on there. So here you are.
I mean, I was a fan favorite back in the first year, I believe, that we started this. And then just to see us start from the bottom, now we're here. If you've seen that first episode that we did, it was pretty ratchet.
Janky, yeah, because Matt Mitchell had like the whiteboard with the designs on it.
Ari was sweating like he just got done.
Because I just ran from Hinkle. Anyway, so Tomich, I'm gonna paint you a picture right now. There's a car on the highway cruising 70 miles an hour, and its exit is right up ahead. And, you know, then the check engine light comes on. You're like, you know what? It's probably nothing. I'll just keep going. And you drive a little more, and all of a sudden, bang, your front tire blows out. And you're like, this is definitely bad, but I'm almost at my exit. Like, I'll be fine. And then, bang, your other front tire blows out. So now you're in the slow lane, two blown front tires, your blinkers are on. This is the story of Butler basketball in the last 2 weeks. We were cruising to the NCAA tournament. We had just beaten Creighton, looking like we were in the top 25, 5 or 6 seed. And then the wheels fell off. St. John's lost terrible. Seton Hall lost terrible. What happened?
I mean, as you saw, we made that switch to the road. Goes perfectly with your analogy. We hit the road and we started breaking down.
You can pull that mic right up to you, Tomich.
We started breaking down right out on the road, basically. We hit the road games and we started falling apart. We had one of our worst road records in years. It's just something about being away from Hinkle that this team couldn't put all together. I mean, Kamar Baldwin kind of disappearing.
Yeah, we'll get to him.
Then Keelan basically just trying to put us on his back, and Paul Jorgensen not lining up like he was coming off the bench anymore. I mean, that all that adds up after a while.
I mean, this has been the story of Butler all year, is that they're consistently inconsistent. And that you can have good stretches and bad stretches all season long. That's not going to be a recipe for winning a game in the Big East, let alone making a run.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be able to play at a consistent level. I'm not talking about consistency from game to game. I'm talking about consistency from, like, possession to possession. Mm-hmm. You can't have a great first half and then just blow it. I mean, that St. John's game, we were up by, what, 11 with, like, 5? No, up by 5 with 11 seconds to go.
Yeah.
Your win probability is like 99%. It's just dumb decisions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Butler needs to pull it together. I mean, it just seems like they're running around with chickens without their heads cut off some possessions, making dumb fouls, not getting the ball to the right places on offense, not moving, rotating. When Butler's at its absolute best, it's moving the ball. It's free-flowing. It's consistency. It seems like it's moving and firing all cylinders. And if something seems to break down partially, the whole thing just goes kaput. They just can't seem to figure out how to strap up and figure it out at the times that they need to.
I mean, you touched on this earlier, is that Kamar Baldwin, he's been getting a lot of heat on social media, and I mean, rightfully so. I mean, he's struggling. The last 4 games, he's averaging 8.75 points per game, 31% from the field, 24% from 3. I mean, make no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Those are bad stats.
Yeah.
Very bad. Before I say what I think is the problem, yeah. What do you think's the issue with him?
I feel like he's just starting to, at this point, he's getting in that slumpy, almost starting to force at certain things. He's trying to do too much to dig himself out of the hole, and I think that's where some of the frustration fouls came in this last game. He picked up 2 fouls within, I think, like 6 seconds.
Yeah.
You can't be doing that. And then caught the 3rd one right before the end of the first half. If you want to dig yourself out of the hole, you got to be on the floor to do it. That's for sure.
That's a really good point. He was in foul trouble. My thing is, I tweeted this a couple days ago. I remember last year when Kamar came in, and he was phenomenal early on, and everyone kept saying, he's going to hit the freshman wall. He's going to hit the freshman wall, but it never really happened. I think now it's kind of happening.
Yeah.
Where he's playing, I mean, all right, we play 8 guys on our team, but let's be real here. The offense runs through Keelan and Kamar. They are 1A and 1B.
Yeah.
And so if you look at Kamar, on the offensive end, pretty much every time you go down the court, he's either getting the opportunity to make a play or he's touching the ball. And then on the defensive end, he is guarding the best player on the opposing team for 35 minutes plus every night in conference play. For every single game.
That's a full
I think
slate.
He's tired as hell. And I think, seriously, he's hit the wall. He's gassed. And if I know Kellen Dunham was your boy,
yeah.
right? Do you remember at the end of the year, every single year, like in tournament time, he would always struggle?
Yeah.
I think it's because he worked so hard, he ran out of gas. It maybe like Kamara. I've always told, when I was coaching and I in AAU and in high school, I would tell my guys, if you're tired, tell me. Because I don't care how good you are, you're useless to me if you're tired.
Yeah.
I think that might be an issue.
I think it's about time that he's starting to hang it. I mean, his usage rate this year more than last year, even so, was it exploded. I mean, he really started wearing down, and you saw Kellen with that last year, like you brought up. Mm-hmm. I mean, he even had that middle stretch where he went like 0 for 20 plus for three. And I really do think that wearing of the defense, I mean, he's also starting to see some of the best defenders on him, and the Big East is not shy for good guards out there. I mean, trying to sweep Jalen Brunson?
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough. That's a tough ask for him to do, and he almost pulled it off still. So I know what you're saying, if you need a breath and come off the court, but now around this time, around March, it's starting to become push comes to shove.
Yeah.
And you need to have all that training and all that time and all that off season. It needs to show up now. So I get that he's tired, but he needs to really try and strap it up and get ready for this tournament.
I'm with you.
You need to push through. It's the fourth quarter. Sometimes coaches also tell you, no, it's the fourth quarter. You got to give it everything you got. I'm not saying Kamara's not giving it everything he's got.
Yeah.
I mean, you see his hustle out there. But I think more so the slump. I think if coach can get him a couple of quick, easy looks, I think that's what he needs. I think he needs a quick couple baskets to get his mind right, to show him that there is no lid over the basket. And once he gets those, then he'll get into that free-flowing offense again.
He does take a lot of difficult shots. And, you know, it's kind of, just when you were saying that, it just came to me that if I'm saying he's playing too much, if you're asking me, okay, Ari, do you think we should bench Kamar more? I'm going to say, okay, no, I want him on the court. It's such a, I think this is such, I'm not trying to like dig on LaValle. I think it's a thing a lot of young coaches do is it's tough to manage minutes of your best players. I think we see a lot of coaches, you know, Brandon Miller had trouble with this.
Yeah.
A lot of the really good coaches have trouble early on.
Did you say Brandon Miller was one of the really good coaches?
No, I was saying you saw it with him in terms of Butler, where it's tough to manage. Like you saw Kellen Dunham was playing like 36 minutes that one year with Brandon Miller. When Holtman came in the next year, who was a more experienced coach, his minutes dropped to like 28 a game.
Yeah.
So I think LaValle will get it. I think right now the offense is so dependent on Keelan and Kamar, he really doesn't want to take them out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of tough to take them out.
It's that disparity. I mean, the talent disparity is obvious. We have, like you said, Keelan and Kamar are 1A and 1B. And to bring it up, again, that Brandon Miller year with Kellen Dunham, he didn't really have a lot around him. He was forced to do that. And then the next year came in and we got some transfers and some people who could score the ball a little bit. And it was a lot easier to take him out of the game then.
You mentioned Keelan Martin. This first team, All Big East, unanimous selection, rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely.
In conference play, 23.6 points per game, 5.7 rebounds, 2.1 assists, and 43% from three. Those are monster numbers. I don't think a lot of people realize what this team would look like without him on the team. We might be like a 14-15 win team without him. He is that good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know about that, 14 or 15. Keelan has been everything for us. I've been waiting and itching to get back onto the show and talk about him.
Let's do it.
Keelan Martin has made leaps and bounds from what I used to get day in and day out frustrated with him at games, taking unnecessary ugly pull-up jumpers and fading away, never taking to the rim, never using his body or his quickness. It is night and day. I think that Keelan Martin has made such a transition and it's really blossomed into quite a type of player. Where there was times I doubted his potential at the next level, I can fully see it now. And he was putting it on full display all year for us to see. Had we not had this little bit of a skid, I mean, who knows? I think he could have possibly been in contention for co-Big East Player of the Year had we not taken this 3 or 4 game slot.
That's interesting you said that, because here's what I was thinking. If he, if you flipped Butler's record with Villanova's record,
mm-hmm.
Keelan Martin wins Big East Player of the Year, he might win National Player of the Year. That's the big difference, because Jalen Brunson and Trayvon Blewett are getting the nods right now for Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Keelan is on that level. It's just those two teams have more wins.
Yeah.
But Keelan is on that level. He would be a National Player of the Year candidate if Butler were, you know, in top 10 team. It's without question.
And it blows my mind. I mean, he obviously gets the recognition from the Butler community. Obviously, he gets the recognition from the Big East. I mean, Jay Wright even said he needed to bring out LeBron James at one point to try and stop Keelan Martin. But I still don't think he gets respect nationally. And that's partly because Butler has been sliding a little bit this year. Had, like you said, had Butler had a few more wins or been even replaced with one of those teams' win-loss records, he'd absolutely be in the conversation.
This goes with Kamar, too. Him and Keelan clean up so much junk in our offense. I can't tell you how many times like a possession breaks down and there's nothing happening, and Keelan and Kamar strap on their backpacks and just go to work and clean up the mess. That's really understated. I'm really curious to see this team next year without Keelan and, you know, with Kamar kind of leading the way.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of those things.
Kamar's going to needs to get bigger. I mean, his size needs to increase for him to take an even bigger role than he currently has right now, to take it to the rack, to play defense, to keep up with his usage rate, because I can only imagine his minutes going up next year. I don't really necessarily see where we can take away from his minutes and be a successful team.
Hopefully get some transfers or something.
Yeah, hopefully we need to. Hopefully we're in the right market right now because of all these scandals going on.
But that's a good point.
But besides that, I can't see an instance where Kamar isn't going to be the lead of the team next year unless Jordan Tucker, for some reason, seamlessly fills into a Keelan Martin role, which is
there's
very
no
difficult.
Just really quick on Jordan Tucker. My expectations for him, I've said this before.
Low.
If he averages like 10 points a game, that's what I'm expecting.
I'd be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really tough to come in and be the man.
Just sharp 20 points out of nowhere in a team in a system that you kind of have to re-pick up and re-get together. And we also, there's going to be a lot of attention on him because it's going to be him and Kamar most likely. I can't really see Jorgensen polishing off his consistency anymore.
To be fair to Jorgensen, aside from that last game against Seton Hall, he had been really good off the bench. I mean, I think he had 17 points back-to-back games.
I prefer it.
Yeah, I mean, and he's taking better shots. I mean, he's still missing them, but a lot of my criticism with him was that his shot selection was jank as hell. He's gotten better at that.
I preferred him coming off the bench, honestly.
Yeah.
I think Sean McDermott, as much as I don't necessarily, like, I value Sean McDermott.
Oh,
I'm just not the highest on Sean McDermott, but I feel like their roles in those situations, it makes a lot more sense. Paul Jorgensen does not, obviously, feels quite fine pulling up from anywhere in the court, where Sean McDermott's a little bit more hesitant. Yes, he does take smarter and better shots, but I feel like him fitting into the role with Keelan and Kamar being that pop-out where Jorgensen has a little bit more free to run around with that second team and create, that's more of his role, and I think that he fits better there. He just needs to start hitting the shots.
Before we get to Brian Weitz is going to make a call in to give us a stats update for the tournament. Before we do that, Tomich, you talked about the FBI allegations. How nice is it to know that what Butler, like, I knew Butler wasn't going to be on the list, but how nice is it to know that just like Butler's going to be scooting scot free from this and gnarly ass Xavier might get busted?
Like I said, I mean, we're in the right market for transfers.
I agree.
We're potentially, knock on wood, not the way that we've been playing, but potentially a tournament team with a lot of open spots and chances to score in a big conference. We're in the right market for transfers right now. So I can only see Butler trying to come out on top. And it's obviously always nice to see Xavier and having not only their current but also former coach getting a little bit of investigation. You got to have a little smile on your face as a Butler fan.
With that, we are going to head to the phone lines. Brian Weitz has got some stats for us. On the phone line right now, Brian Weitz, returning after his performance at last week's Hoopcast. The people have spoken. They demanded more. Brian, you are back, and we need some more stats, and there's only one person to call, and it had to be you. So what are we talking about?
Mr. Castle, it is March, so what does that mean for us?
It means March Madness, hopefully, as long as the dogs don't keep blowing it.
Fingers crossed. So I wanted to address the change in the way that the NCAA is selecting teams this year and what it means for Butler going into the next couple of weeks. So previously, when the NCAA had looked at resumes, they had looked at games in allocations of top 50, top 100, and top 200, and then 200 and below. This year, they're breaking it down to put games into quadrants 1, 2, 3, and 4. And what that means is that quadrant 1 is home games against 1 through 30, neutral against teams 1 through 50, away 1 through 75. Quadrant 2 is home games against 31 through 75, neutral 51 to 100, away 76 through 135. And then quadrant 3 and 4 will be your lesser teams. And those ratings are determined by a combination of your RPI, I think KenPom, and your basketball power index factored in there.
All right.
And so what we see with Butler this year is we see in quadrant four, they're 6-0. In quadrant three, they're 6-1. So those are going to be your 13 worst games on the schedule. Quadrant two, they're 4-1, and then quadrant one, they are 3-10.
Sheesh.
So we see a big drop off in performance once we start playing those top 50 teams or so. And these are who we're going to be seeing in the NCAA tournament. And so I thought it would be interesting to look at what is happening in these games. So I went back through the metrics, and there's a substantial drop off in both our offensive and defensive performance. Looking at quadrant one,
when we're playing the quadrant one teams, you mean?
Yes,
okay.
In our games against the quadrant one games, so that's going to be your Novas, your Seton Halls, your Xavier's, your at Marquette, right? And at Providence, Purdue, Ohio State, Texas, Maryland. We are scoring on 40.8% of our possessions, and normally we will score on 47%. So outside of quadrant one games, we're scoring about almost 20% more often. We're also stylistically a little bit different. We're throwing the ball down into the post about half as much, and we're doing so about 10% less effectively as we normally do, and that is carrying over to more pick and rolls, which we are also doing much less effectively. But the biggest difference that we're seeing in quadrant one games versus everything else is our two-point field goals are just dropping off the table. From about 17 feet and in is where Butler's win-loss breakdown is determined. So on two-point field goals, which is defined as under 17 feet, we're shooting 47.1% in quadrant one games. Outside of quadrant one games, we're at 58.1%. That is exacerbated because on short jump shots, so inside of jump shots inside of 17 feet, we're only 25.9%. So we're really struggling then. And our culprits here are our Jorgensen is really struggling in quadrant one games. He's shooting 40.4% in quadrant one and 60% outside of quadrant one games on his jump shots. And so, and then another thing that we're looking at, Nate Fowler, he's actually 1-for-10 on his threes in quadrant one, and he's shooting 46 on his threes against everybody else. And so we're seeing that. Then Kamar is also somebody who's struggling in these games. He's shooting the ball 50% more times in quadrant one games, but his shooting percentage is only about 2/3 of what it is against everybody else.
I would imagine that quadrant one games for most teams are going to be, you know, your stats are not going to be as good, but I can't imagine the drop off is as drastic as it is for Butler compared to a team like Purdue or Ohio State.
And they shouldn't be as drastic, and obviously the better your team's going to be, the less drastic they're going to be. I think that what we see when we compare to quadrant two is really kind of interesting, though, because when we go to quadrant two, Paul Jorgensen, who I just said was one of the people that struggled most on his jump shots, his two-point field goal percentage on in quadrant two games is 70.8. So he's almost doubling his field goal percentage when we go to quadrant two. Then when I said our short jump shots under 17 feet were really struggling in quadrant one games, we're shooting 76.5% on those same shots against quadrant two teams. So, and then our spot-up shooting goes to 1.21 points per possession, and we're taking spot-up shots about 50% of the time against quadrant two. So our offensive effectiveness goes up almost exponentially. And then the same issues that we struggle with defensively, quadrant two, with quadrant one, completely turn around against quadrant two teams. For example, our zone defense against quadrant one teams is about 1.2 points per possession allowed. Against quadrant one teams, our zone is like 0.35 points per possession. So it's literally been four times more effective once we get below those teams that are in the top 50 or so.
Obviously, this is the first time that the selection committee is determining who makes the tournament using these quadrants. Is there any I guess we don't know because it's never been done before, but is there not an indication there that this would be an excuse for Butler to not make the tournament if your quadrant one games, which are weighed so heavily, they're just so bad in?
Well, when you look at the tournament committee, you you're not picking on a predictive basis. And so what we can take here is there's not something that specifically we can look at here to say that Butler is going to struggle against a quadrant one team, because we've seen games such as Villanova at Marquette where we just come in and are astounding. And so I don't think if you're looking at what the tournament committee is going to do, you can say that they're going to make a prediction to forecast how Butler will perform. And even if they did so, when you've played 13 games and you've had two or three of them that are just amazing, that's not enough to say that Butler can't do it. I think that what we see in quadrant one is a multiplier of the effects of Butler's inconsistency this year. So I think that what we have more is more cause for concern in our record against quality teams. And I think that's more likely to affect your seed line if you're Butler than it is when you actually get into the tournament.
Brian, the final question. Is Butler in the tournament no matter what? Or will a loss from Seton Hall that we're in no matter what?
We're in no matter what. My seed line predictions are with a loss where we will be a 10, possibly an 11. I don't think we will be in Dayton. I think that if we win one game, we're an 8. If we win two, we are a 6. And if we win the championship, we will be a 5. Let me throw one more thing at you.
Yeah.
Last 10 games for each team in the country, where do you think our defensive efficiency ranks? This is my fun stat of the day.
For our last set, for the, like, the last 10 games we've played?
Last 10 games we've played compared to every other team's last 10 games. Adjusted defensive efficiency.
Of where our defense ranks? I don't know. 100.
6.
Sixth? Like the sixth best?
Sixth best, yes.
What? That's unbelievable.
So as much as I just brought to the table there in terms of a statistical breakdown, this team just seems to throw out every single thing that the eye test can offer you and just completely throws it out the window.
That is, man, that's unbelievable.
Yes, and that is from HaslamMetrics.com, I believe. Nope, that is Bartorvik.com.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a lot to think about. Brian, we are going to have to get you on next week, hopefully after Butler wins their first round in the tournament, to get some more insight from hopefully the win. But as always, we appreciate it, my man.
All right. Good talking to you, Ari.
Yes, sir. Well, sixth best in the country, apparently, over the last 10 games. I wouldn't have thought so.
I wouldn't have thought sixth. I thought the defense was not nearly as big of a problem as the offense. Obviously, the offense has been struggling tremendously. But wow, sixth? That has me feeling a little bit better that if we can kind of right the ship as far as our offense goes, that we'll be at least looking decent for whoever we kind of match up here going with the Big East and hopefully the next round. So we'll see.
So Brian says we're in no matter what. I've seen every mock bracket I've seen has Butler in no matter what, pretty much. I'd say we're in, but I also think the bubble can pop quickly. Like, if Gonzaga loses in the championship game and someone steals a bid, or like some in the ACC, if like Georgia Tech runs the table and steals a bid, like that would knock Butler off, I'm worried about.
There's a lot of unlikely situations, but I mean, who knows in March? I guess that's why they call it March Madness. I mean, I want to say last year we saw a handful of teams sneak in and take bids away. I mean, the first conference tournament already, we saw Michigan go out and take the Big Ten title. Obviously, I believe they still would have had a position in the tournament. But I find it hard to believe if we lose another one to Seton Hall, and after what Brian just broke down to us about the quadrant one, that was a little bit eye-opening to
3-10, me. 3-10, yeah.
Obviously, the stats will, like you said, drop off a little bit in the first quadrant compared to the rest, but those were ugly
staggering
numbers to hear off.
I got some good news, Tomich, possibly for Butler fans. Last season, Lavelle Jordan was the head coach at Milwaukee. They were dead last in the Horizon League. But when the conference tournament came around, they made a run all the way to the conference championship game. I don't know if Lavelle's got some Michael's Secret stuff he's putting in the water for his guys, but I mean, that is encouraging to me that he can turn it around on such short notice like that.
The team's got to buy in, and that's tough to do when you're skidding so hard like this. Yes, he was able to get it done there, but will he be able to get it done here? It's a matter of if we can get our star players going often and early. Obviously, it's not a problem for Keelan. Kamar we need. Paul we need. I find it really tough. Like, we're definitely a lot closer to the bubble than I think some of these brackets believe.
Yeah, I think so. I'm with you.
So the bracketologists are a little bit more forgiving.
I'll be sweating on Sun. If we beat Seton Hall, yeah, I won't be worried. If we lose to Seton Hall, I will absolutely be sweating.
I'll definitely be nervous and be tuned in very tightly to this Selection Sunday if that's the case. Ideally, let's hope it doesn't get to that.
Yeah.
It's tough for a team to beat you three times in a year. I mean, you hear that all the time on your basic call-outs from sports fans everywhere. But the way Butler's been playing, it's pretty believable.
Last thing I want to talk to you about, Tomich, and this is assuming Butler makes the tournament. When I'm picking my tournament to go all the way, one of the first things and main things I look at is momentum. What a team has done in the last, like, five games before the tournament. If Butler loses to Seton Hall again, they'll have three straight losses going into March Madness. It is really, really tough, in my opinion, to lose three straight games and then win a game in the tournament, let alone make a run.
Yeah.
I don't want to pick up against Butler, but it's one of those things, like, because they always seem to deliver in the first round in March. Like, since I've been a student at Butler or graduated, they haven't lost in the first round of the tournament. But I would have a hard time picking them to win if they lost three straight and then, like, snuck in as a 10 seed.
Yeah.
I would just be really, like, not optimistic.
It's matchups, matchups, matchups. I mean, it really depends on who we get paired up with, how they match up with our team. Yes, we've looked bad, but as we kind of talked about briefly earlier, I saw a tweet out, TBT to Tomich's tweets, by the way.
Tomich's tweets.
Little TBT to Tomich's tweets. I saw it on Twitter that Butler is one of the top five most inconsistent teams in America. So obviously that's a bad thing, but it can also be a very good thing. We've slid pretty poorly. If we can all of a sudden catch a fire, Paul Jorgensen finds his groove, who knows what could happen?
So
we have high highs and very low lows.
I would agree. What is the expectation for you for Butler? Because at this point, I've already considered the season a success. I didn't think we'd be sniffing the bubble before the season started. So I'm already considering it a success. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the season was a success overall. I think it would be amazing and a crazy start to Laval's year if we can knock out two. One would be cherry on top of the season. Like you said, we did better than what we thought we were going to. Two would be just
winning
the whole
Big East
cake.
Game in the turn.
winning the Big East, any kind of games, two games in the Big East would be nice. But I have my focus on March Madness. That's where the real players come to play. Obviously, conference tournaments are nice, but I want two wins would be all the cake. One win would be the cherry on top, I guess, of a nice season.
Tomich, we will have to talk to you again before the season is over. I'm sure the fans will be loving that you're returned to the Hoopcast. Do you have any final words before we sign off?
Let's say that the role players, I'd say number one, that's the biggest difference. If they can help out and give Kamara a little bit of help so he doesn't have to force as much, I'm lying. Paul Jorgensen, Nate Fowler, Henry Bailey, and Sean McDermott. The success of this team will ride and die with those guys.
I'm not looking to beat IU this week. I'm not looking to beat Xavier. So I'm saying Seton Hall sucks. Go Dogs.